If you're a custodial supervisor at a local high school, you know that cleanliness is key and that the best place to get cleaning supplies is from Grainger. Grainger helps you stay fully stocked on the products you trust, from paper towels and disinfectants to floor scrubbers. Plus, you can rely on Grainger for easy reordering, so you never run out of what you need. Call 1-800-GRAINGER, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
If you're a maintenance supervisor at a manufacturing facility and your machinery isn't working right, Grainger knows you need to understand what's wrong as soon as possible. So when a conveyor motor falters, Grainger offers diagnostic tools like calibration kits and multimeters to help you identify and fix the problem. With Grainger, you can be confident you have everything you need to keep your facility running smoothly. Call 1-800-GRAINGER, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
If you're a custodial supervisor at a local high school, you know that cleanliness is key and that the best place to get cleaning supplies is from Grainger. Grainger helps you stay fully stocked on the products you trust, from paper towels and disinfectants to floor scrubbers. Plus, you can rely on Grainger for easy reordering, so you never run out of what you need. Call 1-800-GRAINGER, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
If you're a maintenance supervisor at a manufacturing facility and your machinery isn't working right, Grainger knows you need to understand what's wrong as soon as possible. So when a conveyor motor falters, Grainger offers diagnostic tools like calibration kits and multimeters to help you identify and fix the problem. With Grainger, you can be confident you have everything you need to keep your facility running smoothly. Call 1-800-GRAINGER, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
This is continuing coverage of United States versus Sean Diddy Combs from the Hidden Killers podcast and True Crime Today.
He called them freak offs. That's what Cassie Ventura told a federal courtroom this week as she stood on the witness stand. Eyes level with the jury, recounting some of the darkest, most dehumanizing experiences of her adult life. Freak-offs. A phrase that sounded like it came from a bad nightclub flyer. What was Sean Diddy Combs allegedly doing in freak-offs? A word he used to describe drug-fueled sex parties he orchestrated down to the finest detail, the temperature of the room, the lighting, the people involved, even the color of her nail polish. Every element was micromanaged by Combs, Ventura testified. She wasn't a girlfriend in those moments. She wasn't even a partner. She was, in her words, a job. That's how the third day of Combs' federal trial opened. No warm-up, no buffer, just Cassie. Now, 37. Explaining how she became trapped inside a routine she says revolved entirely around Diddy's wants, his control, his appetites. These freak-offs allegedly took place in cities all over. Los Angeles, New York, Miami, even overseas. And they weren't spontaneous. They were choreographed. Combs, she said, would often record the encounters, storing away footage that she would later come to believe served as a threat. Leverage, something he could always use to shame or control her if she ever tried to leave. It's quite a sick world that Sean Diddy Combs lived in and drug others into under the guise of celebrity, fame, fortune, power, whatever it may be. It all came at a price. Not a price of necessarily time, money and such for those involved, but a price of their dignity. You give me your dignity, I'll give you this. And then I'll take a little more dignity. And so you can't leave. Tell me what you think about how things went in court today in the comment section on YouTube. Press subscribe, of course, wherever you're watching this or listening to this, whether it's YouTube, Twitter, X, or on any podcast platform. Hit subscribe so you don't miss any of our coverage on this. And yes, I really do want to hear your thoughts on this in the comments section. So what do you do? How do you leave something like this? And she did try. Over the course of her testimony, Ventura described multiple attempts to pull away, to escape the life she says she was forced to live. But every time she took a step back, she said Combs pulled her harder into it through manipulation, violence, or the looming threat of humiliation. She told jurors that she was routinely made to take drugs, not because she wanted to, but because it was the only way she could mentally endure what was being done to her. GHB, ketamine, ecstasy, whatever helped her disconnect, she described using them like armor. Or Skittles. Something to help her numb out, to float above what was happening to her body and her mind when she could not say no. Ventura said there were days when these freak-offs would last so long, sleep became a luxury. There was no space to do anything else, she testified. Her life during that period was reduced to performance and recovery. And it wasn't in a studio. And when she wasn't performing, she said she was recovering from all the psychological fallout of it all or from the violence. She wasn't just talking about sex. She was talking about being beaten. One of the most brutal moments of the day came when Ventura recounted a 2012 incident inside a moving SUV. She admitted she had punched Combs in the face out of frustration. She didn't try to dodge that fact, but what followed, she said, was unlike anything she could have anticipated. Combs, according to Ventura, turned cold. His demeanor changed. His eyes went black, she told the courtroom. Then he hit her, knocked her down inside the car. She tried to crawl under a seat. She said to shield herself, he allegedly stomped on her, kicked her, and left her battered. The prosecutor asked if she ever saw him injured by any of these altercations. She shook her head, no, not once. But she said she needed days to recover from the injuries he left behind. There were moments when Ventura seemed to be carrying the full weight of years she's tried to forget. Her voice cracked when she spoke about the shame, not just from what had been done to her, but from what she had been forced to do to others. She said Combs would have her recruit women for these freak-offs. Friends, strangers, people she now believes were treated as disposable. She called it personal shame. She said she carried it with her long after the cameras stopped rolling, after the music faded. She said she was made to feel like she was only good for one thing. And she lived in that belief for years. Then there was a story about Kid Cudi around 2011, during a time she says she and Combs had briefly split, Ventura dated the rapper. When Combs found out by going through her phone during a freak-off, he allegedly lost it. She described him flying into a rage, holding a wine opener between his fingers like brass knuckles, lunging at her in fury. But it didn't end there. Ventura testified that Combs threatened to blow up Cootie's car, not in a joking, puffed-up rapper way, in a way that left her genuinely terrified. Then came the eerie part. Cootie's car actually did explode in his driveway sometime after that. Ventura didn't accuse Combs outright of causing it, but she said the coincidence haunted her. She cut off contact with Cootie. She said the threat felt too real. She wasn't alone in experiencing that fear. Ventura told the court she once watched Combs attack her friend, Brianna Bungolin, at her apartment. She said Combs grabbed Bungolin and dangled her over a 17th floor balcony before slamming her down onto patio furniture. That friend would later file a civil suit of her own. Ventura's testimony tracked closely with those claims, further building the prosecution's argument that this wasn't a one-time thing. It was a pattern. The prosecution didn't need to coach her. Ventura didn't come across as someone trying to impress a jury. She owned her contradiction. She admitted she'd filed a civil lawsuit in 2023 and settled it within 24 hours. She took a payout. But when asked why she was now testifying in a criminal case under oath on the record, she didn't hesitate. "I wanted to be compensated for the time and the pain," she said plainly. "But this was something different. This," she said, "was about no longer carrying the guilt, no longer protecting someone who she says never protected her." She wasn't just giving testimony, she was shedding skin. Theodore Combs sat in the defense table, flanked by lawyers. His expression was unreadable. His daughters, who had attended earlier sessions, weren't there, likely due to the explicit nature of the day's testimony. And hey, you don't want to think of your dad as this monster, but sorry, girls, he's a monster. The best thing you can do is never talk to him again for the rest of your life. But his sons were, you know, the ones he groomed, the ones that have their own charges against him for living a lifestyle with accusations very similar to this against them. And his mother was there as well. And a courtroom full of media and legal observers took in every word Ventura said. There were no outbursts, no dramatics, just the slow, steady unraveling of a carefully curated public image, thread by thread. Ventura never once claimed perfection. She admitted to starting fights. She admitted to being angry, but she kept circling back to the same truth, that none of what happened was equal, that no matter how messy things got, the scale of violence, the control, the threats, the blackmail were all very one-sided. And then almost as a quiet closing note, she looked out at the courtroom and said what may have been the most important line of the day. "I can't carry the shame anymore." She didn't need to say more. That line lingered in a case that's been buried in headlines, conspiracy theories, and decades of celebrity power plays. It was the first time someone at the center of all of it stepped into the light and told a story that felt real, raw, and terrifyingly human. Next, the courtroom would move from words to evidence, from her testimony to what the government says backs it all up. But for now, the story stood on its own, complete, undeniable, and officially part of the record. There's a moment in every trial where the story shifts from the telling to the showing. Words become images. Allegations become exhibits. And for the jurors sitting in that federal courtroom, May 14th was that moment. The day picked up where Cassie Ventura's testimony left off, except now it wasn't just her words being offered as evidence. It was photographs, videos, screenshots, visuals that prosecutors argued were the concrete footprint of everything she had just spent 2 days describing in painstaking detail. But this wasn't the kind of material that could be casually dropped into the courtroom slideshow. These were explicit sex tapes, graphic photos, materials that had to be handled like live wires, carefully, deliberately, and under strict procedural control. The judge, Aaron Submarinian, wasn't leaving anything to chance. Before jurors saw a single frame from any footage, the court recessed to figure out the logistics, not out of squeamishness, but out of necessity. The courtroom was packed, media, spectators, family, and what was about to be introduced wasn't just salacious, it was legally sensitive and deeply private. So the court paused, not to debate whether the material should be shown, but how. When proceedings resumed, it was clear the plan had been set. Screens were aligned, monitors positioned, and the public feed was cut. Jurors would view the images on personal screens placed in front of them. Everyone else in the room, reporters, spectators, even parts of the legal teams, were kept in the dark. Cassie Ventura remained on the stand as the exhibits came out. She was handed a sealed binder of printed screenshots and stills from the videos. Her role wasn't to explain the acts depicted in every detail, but to confirm authenticity. She identified herself in the images. She named others involved, some of whom the prosecution says will testify later under pseudonyms One woman, referred to only as Mia, appeared in several stills Ventura confirmed had been taken at what she called freak-off events. Another figure, a man named Jules, appeared in images from more than one session. He, Ventura testified, was a male escort hired by Combs. None of these visuals were shown publicly. Even courtroom artists were limited in what they could sketch, but those in attendance did catch glimpses of the jurors' reactions, and for the most part, they were unreadable. Stone-faced, quiet, occasionally glaring up at Ventura as she narrated. A few looked away after only a moment with certain images. Others stared longer. No one looked shocked. If anything, the vibe was one of grim acknowledgement. But the prosecution wasn't just interested in showing explicit content for shock value. They were laying groundwork. The photos and the screenshots weren't about titillation. They were about corroboration. Cassie had told the jury these events happened. Now the jury was seeing them for themselves, framed and frozen on screens that only they could view. The prosecution didn't stop with visuals. They moved to digital records, text messages exchanged between Ventura and Combs, extracted from her phone and laptop. In one string of texts from 2016, Combs expressed frustration about Ventura using ketamine before one of the sex parties. Quote, "We have to have a proper one with no K. I hate K," he texted, referring to ketamine. Ventura told the jury that ketamine made her inactive, not fully present, that it made her check out, and that Combs didn't like that. He wanted her participating, responsive, performing. Another thread took it a different tone, panic in it. Combs is seen pressing Ventura about a possible leak of a sex tape footage. He's urgent, demanding, telling her to find out who saw it, what the room looked like, what the guy resembled. "This is your life, and this is serious," he wrote. "Do not let him out of your sight, WTF. Ventura explained this was a common pattern. Combs would lose control over something, then go into crisis mode. The texts, she said, weren't about protecting her. They were about protecting him. And then came the legal pushback midway through testimony. Ventura began to describe how after particularly violent episodes, she would retreat, hide, and mentioned staying in hotel rooms just to avoid further attacks. That's when the defense objected. The objection wasn't loud or theatrical, but it was procedural. But it was telling. The moment Ventura shifted from describing physical acts to discussing how she protected herself afterwards, the defense called foul. Judge Semmerainen called a sidebar. What was said there isn't part of the public record, but the outcome was clear. The judge let the questioning continue. There perhaps was some narrowing. That brief interruption signaled a tightrope both sides are walking. How much context is too much? How far can a witness go before the story becomes editorial? That's the question. The rest of the day unfolded with a sense of controlled tension. As more text messages were entered into evidence, jurors saw conversations that prosecutors argue reveal how deeply Combs controlled Ventura's environment. He had preferences, triggers, rules. There was even a text in which he asked her to change the music being played during one of the encounters. It wasn't about pleasure, it was about dominance, command. Throughout all of it, Combs sat quietly with his legal team. His demeanor was unchanged, focused, but hard to read. The defense attorneys huddled close during the video segment, speaking in whispers, occasionally glancing at monitors, shifting in their seats. One attorney was described as pulling on his fingers, an unconscious tick, maybe, or just the stress of watching evidence you can't fully stop from being seen. It's worth noting who wasn't in the courtroom. Earlier in the trial, Combs' teenage daughters had attended. On this day, they, like I said, were not present, understandably so. What was being presented wasn't just about sex. It was about coercion, humiliation, control. Instead, his adult sons and his mother filled the row behind him, silent and unmoving. Now, the support team you want. When sex tapes of you forcing people to have sex with you and basically torturing them are played in court. The thing every mom looks forward to, and sons to look up to their dad. As the afternoon wore on, court watchers began wondering if the defense would get their shot at Ventura that day, but as the clock edged closer to 5, Judge Semmerainen made the call. He adjourned for the day. The defense cross-examination of Ventura would have to wait until morning. The reasoning was practical. The judge had been keeping a strict schedule throughout the trial. but it also left the day's events suspended in a kind of narrative pause. By the end of the day, the jury had seen the evidence that prosecutors argued backed up every corner of Ventura's story. They'd seen her injuries, heard his texts, looked at the images taken from the party she described, and while no one knows how jurors are processing it all, one thing is certain: Ventura's account no longer existed in isolation. It now had texture, documents, data, images. The court recessed without fanfare, no crossfire, no courtroom fireworks, just the end of a long, heavy day with more weight still to come. Give me your thoughts on day number 3 of the trial of Sean Diddy Combs in the comment section on YouTube. And like I said, hey, press subscribe wherever you're listening to us so you don't miss our coverage on the case. We're bringing it to you every single day. Full rundowns, full recaps of everything that happened in court in the trial of Sean Diddy Combs. My name is Tony Bruschi, and we will talk again real soon.
Want to stay on top of the latest true crime cases? Press subscribe now and never miss a breaking update from the Hidden Killers podcast and True Crime Today.
If you're a custodial supervisor at a local high school, you know that cleanliness is key and that the best place to get cleaning supplies is from Grainger. Grainger helps you stay fully stocked on the products you trust, from paper towels and disinfectants to floor scrubbers. Plus, you can rely on Grainger for easy reordering, so you never run out of what you need. Call 1-800-GRAINGER, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
Time is precious, and so are our pets. So time with our pets is extra precious. That's why we started Dutch. Dutch provides 24/7 access to licensed vets, with unlimited virtual visits and follow-ups for up to 5 pets. You can message a vet at any time and schedule a video visit the same day. Our vets can even prescribe medication for many ailments, and shipping is always free. With Dutch, you'll get more time with your pets and year-round peace of mind when it comes to their vet care. Time is precious, and so are our pets. So time with our pets is extra precious. That's why we started Dutch. Dutch provides 24/7 access to licensed vets, with unlimited virtual visits and follow-ups for up to 5 pets. You can message a vet at any time and schedule a video visit the same day. Our vets can even prescribe medication for many ailments, and shipping is always free. With Dutch, you'll get more time with your pets and year-round peace of mind when it comes to their vet care.
Hi, I'm Paula Zahn, announcing the launch of On the Case, the podcast. Experience the most dramatic true crime investigations in a whole new way. Hear from loved ones on a relentless quest for justice and interviews with the detectives who piece together the mystery. On the Case with Paula Zahn, the podcast, premiering Wednesday, October 1st. Download it wherever you listen to podcasts.
Time is precious, and so are our pets. So time with our pets is extra precious. That's why we started Dutch. Dutch provides 24/7 access to licensed vets, with unlimited virtual visits and follow-ups for up to 5 pets. You can message a vet at any time and schedule a video visit the same day. Our vets can even prescribe medication for many ailments, and shipping is always free. With Dutch, you'll get more time with your pets and year-round peace of mind when it comes to their vet care.
Hi, I'm Paula Zahn, announcing the launch of On the Case, the podcast. Experience the most dramatic true crime investigations in a whole new way. Hear from loved ones on a relentless quest for justice and interviews with the detectives who piece together the mystery. On the Case with Paula Zahn, the podcast, premiering Wednesday, October 1st. Download it wherever you listen to podcasts.
Time is precious, and so are our pets. So time with our pets is extra precious. That's why we started Dutch. Dutch provides 24/7 access to licensed vets, with unlimited virtual visits and follow-ups for up to 5 pets. You can message a vet at any time and schedule a video visit the same day. Our vets can even prescribe medication for many ailments, and shipping is always free. With Dutch, you'll get more time with your pets and year-round peace of mind when it comes to their vet care.
Hi, I'm Paula Zahn, announcing the launch of On the Case, the podcast. Experience the most dramatic true crime investigations in a whole new way. hear from loved ones on a relentless quest for justice, and interviews with the detectives who pieced together the mystery. On the Case with Paul Azan, the podcast, premiering Wednesday, October 1st. Download it wherever you listen to podcasts.
Time is precious, and so are our pets. So time with our pets is extra precious. That's why we started Dutch. Dutch provides 24/7 access to licensed vets with unlimited virtual visits and follow-ups for up to 5 pets. You can message a vet at any time and schedule a video visit the same day. Our vets can even prescribe medication for many ailments, and shipping is always free. With Dutch, you'll get more time with your pets and year-round peace of mind when it comes to their vet care.
Hi, I'm Paula Zahn, announcing the launch of On the Case, the podcast. Experience the most dramatic true crime investigations in a whole new way. Hear from loved ones on a relentless quest for justice, and interviews with the detectives who pieced together the mystery. On the Case with Paula Zahn, the podcast, premiering Wednesday, October 1st. Download it wherever you listen to podcasts. Hi, I'm Paula Zahn, announcing the launch of On the Case, the podcast. Experience the most dramatic true crime investigations in a whole new way. Hear from loved ones on a relentless quest for justice, and interviews with the detectives who pieced together the mystery. On the Case with Paula Zahn, the podcast, premiering Wednesday, October 1st. Download it wherever you listen to podcasts.